Welcome to the Ecology and Research Channel. Green issues, ecology, incredibly important to embodiment. Obviously, we're embodied in place, we're embodied in a world. How we treat ourselves is how we treat the planet and vice versa. So this is super important, I think, for our whole planet. Research relates to this. We've sort of put two together there. We didn't quite know where to put research, so we put them in with ecology. This stage has lots of great speakers, people I personally enjoy, and it's sponsored by Forests Without Frontiers. So rather than sell a sponsorship for this channel, we decided, you know what, let's give it away to a green charity. Tree planting seemed a good one. We thought we can all get behind that. We all breathe air. We looked into a load, actually. Some of them are quite famous, but don't actually plant a lot of trees, weirdly, or other things aren't so good with them. This one, Forests Without Frontiers, really does the work. They're in charge of a really big reforestation project in Central Europe, but, you know, we're all breathing it, thank you. It's run by Nicoletta, a very cool lady, and just a cool organization that really does the work. The money goes, you know, efficiently to actually planting trees. I'm happy to be supporting them. For me, it was like, you know, when we were looking at our charities to support, a green one just made a lot of sense to me. That just was obvious. Please do support them. Links below. As well as that, enjoy the whole channel. There's so much richness in this topic.
So I'd like to introduce you to Dr. Thania Acheron. She's a dance movement therapist, researcher, lecturer, and performer from Puerto Rico, currently based in Wales. She obtained her PhD on the role of dance in violence prevention at the University of Aberdeen and holds a master in dance education from New York University. She's certified as a clinical supervisor and dance movement psychotherapist in the UK and US and has worked in this field for over 15 years. Thania currently works as a lecturer at the University of South Wales in the Faculty of Creative Industries, and she offers international workshops on movement for well-being, therapeutic work with the LGBT plus community, embodied decision-making, physical theater, contemporary dance, interdisciplinary therapeutic arts, and violence prevention. Today, she will talk about embodied decision-making, crucial life transitions, making decisions about crucial matters, impacts our core values and facets of our personal, professional, social, and cultural identities. The interactive workshop presents the main principles of embodied decision-making aimed at supporting people during crucial life transitions. Embodied decision-making is based on the presenter's doctoral research and experience in dance movement psychotherapy and provides new insights into wider applications across the fields of education, health, and well-being and business. So I'm super glad to welcome you today, Thania, and I'm very excited to hear more about this topic. You have to unmute yourself.
Yeah, I think there should be like a permanent flag everywhere that says unmute yourself. So hi, everyone. Really wonderful to see you. Lots of familiar faces. So thank you for sharing a sunny, well, at least in Wales is sunny, so an anomaly of a day over here. So thank you for spending a Sunday with me. I wanted to just start with a little bit of a question because this topic of embodied decision making can be applied to so many different areas. So I just wanted to get a sense of where people are coming from in terms of the field, their field of practice. So if we could just write it down on the chat very briefly, what kind of field are you hailing from? Could it be arts therapies or mental health or education? Just to get a sense of what examples would be better suited for all of you. Let's see. Do we see the chat? Okay, great, wonderful. I don't think I'm able to see the whole chat right now. Oh, there we go. Yes. Okay. Wonderful. Great. Let's see if I can pop it out so I can see it more clearly. There we go. Right. Excellent. Some psychology and coaching. Wonderful. Wow. What a broad, yeah, theater science coaching, psychomotor therapist, arts therapies, drama therapy. Yeah. Great. Dentistry. Excellent. Wonderful. Hello from Holland. Great. Wonderful to see. Right, this is gonna, then I can have a little bit of a tailoring today. Great. So let me just share my screen. I'm going to come in. Yeah, can everybody see it? Okay, yeah, brilliant. So today we're gonna be talking about embodied decision-making, and this is a project, a passion, that started with my PhD research, and I'm going to present to you. We're going to have a little chance to move, a little chance to experience, and this is going to be a taster, because this is a kind of a nugget essential version of what is usually a very intensive weekend style workshop. So I'm going to give you just a little bit of a taste. We're going to also have time for some questions, and we're going to be talking today about crucial life transitions, which I think is quite relevant in the current times we are living today. And also, I wanted to give you, I know there's a lot of people coming from Dance Women Psychotherapy, and I wanted to give you a little bit of an introduction about our field, and just to place it alongside other aspects of embodiment as part of this conference. And so here's my information as well. I'm gonna leave it as well at the end. But we're gonna start with a little movement exercise. Just in case, I mean, you've been in an embodied conference for, for 2 weeks, but just have some space to move, just have a little bit of comfortable clothing. We are going to do a little bit of a writing activity at the end, so if you can have a little bit of writing materials just close to you for the end. But as a movement person, I would be completely hypocritical if we didn't start with movement. So I'm just going to ask you just to have a moment to arrive if we haven't done, and just to settle. Just to make sure that I'm going to pull up some music from my composer, Ross White. So I work also, as well as a dance movement psych therapist, I work in an artistic practice, and Ross is usually the person that I do most of my work with. So they're going to post some of his information in case you love the music you hear today. Everybody hear it? Okay. So having a moment to just close your eyes and arrive, whatever that means for you. To arrive, maybe it means actually patting your body, maybe it means a bit of a work in the space. And noticing where your feet are planted on the floor and what surfaces are making contact with your chair, or you can stand up if it feels more comfortable. And then if there's any kind of stress, anything that interrupts, any thoughts, just encapsulate them in a bubble, and I want them to float out the window away from us at this moment. And we're going to start just thinking about the different parts of our body, and we're going to think that there's a bit of like a rubber band in between them. So we're gonna try and see if we can expand and contract. So that can be in breath, or that can be with our shoulders or knees, anything that you need at the moment to grow and shrink, to expand and contract. And this can be very small in the core, or this can be quite, go further into the extremities and connect it to your breath. Just allowing what is, we're not trying to do too much. You're just trying to see what is happening in the present in the body. And that can be some connections between the chair or in the floor or the legs. Go to where feels present and needing attention. And then we're going to start opening our eyes and becoming aware of our space. We're going to start scanning the three-dimensional space, and that scan can be with your eyes, that scan can be with your hands, can be with anything that has like eyes. So thinking that even your skin has eyes, the sense of proprioception, noticing, expanding the awareness to everything around you. And at the same time, focusing on specific details. Even if the music stops, we're going to keep then transitioning into, for example, starting to go towards with your whole body. So we're going to start even maybe pushing a little bit from the chair, creating a sense of verticality. We can start planting the feet on the floor and just noticing that transition, almost as if we want to stand up, but with a little bit of resistance. So maybe you're going to push a little bit, make a little resistance, and then maybe let passive weight take over. And just, we can plop down on the floor. We could do the same thing with our hands and just let gravity take its course. Just like accompanying it as well with the breath, just kind of letting that let go a little bit. Wonderful. Take a big sigh, because everybody's muted, so it doesn't really matter. Even if it's a bit embarrassing, we can take a big sigh and start kind of teasing back, you know, just testing that transition into the chair, from the chair to standing up if we can. Or pushing against it. Or just with the hands, we can do that on a desk or on a surface. And then we're going to return to the screens, have that moment, and just settle. So thank you very much for taking through that, you know, going through that with me as well. It's just a returning. Oh yeah, we can see me instead of the screen. That's very true. Thanks for doing that. These are the things, in a nutshell, these are the things that we're going to go through and we're going to be talking about. There's three distinct stages that I took you through in the movement exercise. And this translates into how we make decisions and how, you know, any kind of change involves anxiety, any kind of transition involves even the tiniest bit or a very, very big amount of anxiety. So, does anybody have a little bit of, just a bit of feedback about what that felt, what you're feeling now? If we could do it in one word. Freeing. Wonderful. This feeling of connection, settled. Coming back into the body. Beautiful, wonderful. Yeah, thank you. And the resistance. Yes, we're going to be talking about resistance, expansion, and flow. Wonderful, yes. So just to share a little bit about, yeah, keep them coming. Wonderful. about my experience, as the bio says, I work at the University of South Wales, and so I work primarily with postgraduate students, but also for the last 10 years, I've been working with the LGBT plus community and also working and doing competencies in terms of how we create safe spaces and how we allow these spaces to be accessible to a wide variety of people. And in this work, originally I practiced, most of my dance movement psychotherapy practice was with children and working in crisis intervention and working with children with a wide variety of needs. And as my practice has evolved now into more professional development, I started looking at how parts of my practice could be used to support difficult transitions. And then that's quite become very relevant recently with the lockdown, where I've noticed that actually there's a lot of contributions in that dance movement psychotherapy can offer, but it is also a practice that we need to know more about. And one of the things that evolved from this practice and working with particularly students trying to have that big transition from postgraduate to graduation, or examining themselves as practitioners, and also working with the trans community, is how we negotiate change and how there is a reciprocity between movement and the way that we interact with life. And part of the contract that we have, well, it started with a slide from Peggy Hackney, who's one of my inspirations in this work. And she was speaking about how changes in movement equals life changes. And I am breaking one of my rules about having these very wordy slides. So I'm gonna break my rules. Usually I tell my students, but there's a method to the madness. So can everybody see that okay? Yeah. Excellent. So what does it mean to negotiate change, and how is that represented in movement? And this started out as an early slide when I was doing dance therapy 101, and now it's become a little contract of how we proceed in many of the sessions. And I just wanted to show you, just illustrate some of the basic principles about the process of change. The one is the noticing what you are already doing, and having that awareness be created and knowing what is rather than what should be, right? So it's one of the things that I work a lot when I work with clients and with students, is actually going, what is happening in this moment? And then accepting what we are doing, and then we make connections between that and how it's serving, not serving, a particular role or a particular function in our lives. One of the biggest things now that time is unstructured, that our space is unstructured, is trying to clarify intent. Because one of the things when we have making decisions is that sometimes we can get stuck in certain stages, or we can anxiety or our current situation might make us feel powerless and might make us feel like we have very little control over what is happening or what we can do. So knowing an intent and trying to carve out an intent really, really helps, can help clarify pathways without having to pressure someone into action or remain in kind of a rumination stage where we're kind of in this loop of we can't do anything and negative, sending negative messages to ourselves. And one distinct aspect of dance therapy, well, you know, there's a lot of things that we share with other professions, is that we use images, or we use this relationship between body and mind. But we also use symbols, and we use metaphors, and we use play, and that those aspects of dance that can inform dance, not necessarily in the aesthetic way, even though I've used that in an aesthetic way and with some client groups has been quite useful. But looking at that interrelationship between emotion, behavior, and how we observe movement in ourselves and others can really help inform how we start clarifying our intent. And one of the biggest things, which I think is quite key, is that everything is a practice. This is not something that we are born in this embodiment, in embodiment. Before we had words, fancy words to say things, we were crying, hearing our mother's heartbeat, interacting with breath and with tension, with all these elements. But somehow down the line, we get very disconnected, which is probably a running theme in this conference. But it's really important to just allow ourselves time to practice these new patterns. And one of the aspects of dance movement psychotherapy is that we can have an imaginative rehearsal of potential new patterns or potential new situations. And that can happen across all the arts therapies and different manifestations. And then underneath it all is that it is about the process. And in the arts therapies, it's more about the process than about a product or an outcome. And this is some of the things that we're going to be talking about today. And one of the first, 19 years ago when I started my journey in dance therapy, one of the assignments was that we needed to create our own definition of dance therapy. And I think I failed for about 19 years. And I've been usually using the associations in Europe or the ADTA or the ADMP UK. So this year I decided to really delve into my own definition about what dance therapy is. And I wanted to offer it to you. It's brand spanking new. I'm including it in an article that I'm publishing about self-reflexivity based on the work that I'm presenting to you today. And this comes from this elevator pitch of what is dance therapy, dance movement psychotherapy in the UK, dance movement therapy everywhere else. We use the names interchangeably. And one of the most important things is that it is a postgraduate level profession. It's not a top up or it's not a certificate. It is kind of a master's program. And I know there's some dance therapists in the audience that I'm kind of, I'm preaching to the choir, but I think it's just very important to always clarify where I'm coming from before I kind of present a theoretical framework. Self-reflexivity, Becky, yeah. I said self-reflexivity. And it is a profession. We help make and maintain and repair the relationship between body, self, and others. And that, you know, we share that with some of the professions. But our training is in movement analysis. You know, there's various systems of movement analysis. I'm going to be basing today on Laban Bartenieff movement analysis. But there's also a Kessenberg movement profile. And there's many different systems that we use to understand other people's movement and how these things, movement behavior and life stress, can help us transform relationships, right? So it's this idea about we have a psychotherapeutic relationship and a psychotherapeutic contract. And then the major aspect of this definition is that we're asking body questions. We're asking body questions, and I frame it in that way because it is an ongoing process and a journey to understand ourselves and how we're interacting with others, while also trying to remain present and to prioritize our amazing instrument that is the body. Prefacing that, then we talk about crucial life transitions. And one of the things that I found, you know, I think it was a challenge to actually understand, because anything could be a life transition, right? A transition. We transitioned into our living rooms to be able to take this workshop. We transitioned into kind of professional mode and personal mode. And these things are quite mixed at the moment. So I just wanted to present to you a little bit of a categorization so you understand where I'm coming from in terms of how I use embodied decision making with different client groups. One of the most important things and distinctions in my training, because I came from a dance training, in a dance education training into dance movement therapy, was the idea that actually you have to work from where the client is at. And it was really hard not to come with a plan and to actually look at my practice as kind of how does it serve someone and having shared objectives in that process. And then in this aspect of embodied decision making, we can look at how crucial life transitions take place. So in this categorization, I kind of read across different resources and trying to understand how I could offer different types of workshops to people with particular types of transitions. So here's a kind of a model of the different categories. And these, of course, can change and there can be an intermeshing of both. But, you know, right now, particularly in the creative industries, we're looking at career-related life transitions. So we're looking at relocation, or maybe we're thinking about career change, or maybe we've been furloughed from our work. Or, you know, so I've done a lot of workshops around this practitioner identity and what we're passionate about, what we love to do, and trying to mitigate that under the current circumstances. Another crucial life transition category is about relationships. And obviously, there right now, I see it in terms of protective factors and destructive factors. Well, you know, I think the whole profession of mental health and health and well-being is about mitigating and cultivating protective factors so that we have a wider network. And one of the key protective factors right now in the pandemic is the idea that you are connected to other people, and that isolation is one of our biggest threats at the moment. So a lot of the work that I've had with clients around this has been about who are the key people that we can contact? How can people remain in connection with the other, particularly with the challenge of being online? In terms of the health-related category, that is a whole subset of workshops that I haven't really worked on that area at the moment. But yes, in the mental health aspect, but not necessarily with maybe a crucial, you know, a shift in transition or a health diagnosis. Oh, actually, that is not true, because I've been working with a client who's stage 4 cancer. And so we've been working through the transitions of her notion of her physical health and trying to negotiate these different aspects of the identity, and looking at advocacy for cancer. And then in the area of identity is actually my main area. So I've been looking at how people transition and get more support within the LGBT plus community. Also, I've been looking at multiculturalism and how we can challenge some of the aspects of how we negotiate different types of spaces, and that some spaces can be quite not very welcoming. I'm trying to see if I can to plug in my computer, sorry. And this notion as well, intersectionality, how we can also navigate different types of identities throughout our lifetime, and how perhaps we're in spaces where that kind of identity is not welcome or is oppressed or is marginalized in some way. So these are all aspects of my work. I'm just wondering, just wanted to like keep the connection, if there's any... if there are any particular areas that you feel, and we can just use the major category rather than the specific one, and then we can just put them in the chat as the what are the ones that maybe resonate with you at the moment. That's wonderful, Becky. Becky asks, how do we make embodied decisions in a hostile environment? It is very challenging. It is very challenging to do. And one of the aspects that I'm going to be speaking about is how to assess whether an environment is safe enough to make a decision. So we're gonna go through that. So yeah, so I see a lot of people, identity. Yeah, so everybody's kind of gravitating towards a particular category. And so I won't be able to cover all of them, but what I want to do is present to you a little bit of a model of how we can start thinking about these. So in the back of your mind for later, I want you to start thinking about a particular transition, but I don't want it to be a transcendental transition because I'm not there to support you. We can look at a minor transition, but that's just to have it in the back of your mind, maybe a decision or maybe something, but let's keep it quite minor so we can work through it in this way. Yes. So without further ado, let's look at this model. And this is not my model. I wish I would have come up with that. But this is based on Warren Lamb and Rudolf Laban. And for those of you who are not familiar with them, they were movement analysts. Rudolf Laban started a body of work in the Industrial Revolution, a way to quantify, to qualify, and to observe movement in others. And Lamb was one of many, many, many colleagues. And this system has been used not only in dance movement psychotherapy, but it has been used in physiotherapy, in drama, and even music conductor. So it's a system that has been used quite in a wide variety of contexts. Lamb, what he did was kind of make it more pragmatic and a bit more user-friendly in a way, because he was trying to get, he was translating decision-making, but to managerial decisions. So then he had a particular subset of systems. So, but what I do, because I'm not a certified movement analyst, what I wanted to do as a dance movement psychotherapist was that after I had the training and kept training in Kestenberg, and I had courses in love and movement analysis, I wanted to make this a system that I could translate into with students and with people who didn't have any experience of movement. And how do I kind of distill a very, very complicated system into something that people could really connect with and could really use in their reflexivity work, right? So without further ado, this is the model. It starts with, obviously, with evaluation and reflection. This is not a linear model, or it's very dynamic and things can happen in seconds, even though for the purposes of this presentation, I'm kind of illustrating them in a sequential way. But the first stage of the model is flow and tension. And this connects. This is the first thing. You know when something's not right, or when you're feeling when you're feeling that there's a change coming along, you feel it in your body first, right? What are some of the embodied sensations that you have when something needs to change? It can be butterflies in the stomach, and it's usually your body tells you first. And flow is exactly that. It's about this interplay between bound flow with intention and release that usually has an indication that there's a shift coming on, or there's something about to happen. It also connects to your breath, obviously. Sometimes when we're in quite tense situations, you hold your breath, or you know, there's a sigh of relief like we did in the warm-up. But also, I don't want us to think about tension as always negative. We always think about tension as negative. There's also constructive tension, and I write about that in my article, because what's happened, what I've heard from the many, many different workshops, is a workshop I've done across the world, and these workshops, that sometimes there's something positive that happens that also invites change. So you might be moving and you have like a very, very, very positive reaction to something, and that goes, oh, I need to start doing this more, or I need to start connecting to myself more. So we often change because of something wrong happening, but it can also happen from a very positive experience. The second stage, so first, the first stage is flow and tension, and I'm sorry that I can't go into all the terminology, so I'm going to use very simple terminology for this, but for the movement analyst, this might be a bit too simple, but it's okay. the second stage is attention stage. The attention stage is when we start investigating options. So this is when I started, for example, asking people to notice the space and to notice and to go from a wide focus, which is indirect space, to a direct space, which is very honed in focus. And in order for us to cope with life, we need to have both, right? We need to have the ability to take everything in and survey what's around us. This is where it kind of ties into Becky's comment about safety. Because when I did, Martha Eddy used this model for evaluating schools and violence prevention curricula, which I then extended in my thesis to violence prevention across the world with different client groups. I wanted to know if the model that she's kind of did all this research in, if it had some kind of viability by interviewing practitioners in different settings, and it did. And this is where the awareness of safety is quite important. Because we're often, as practitioners, saying, oh, you need to have a voice. It's really important to say your story. But one of the key aspects of this is that you need to be safe and feel safe enough to be able to make a decision. This might translate to domestic violence, or, you know, they're like, oh, you need to leave him, or you need to assess whether something is safe. And that happens in the stage of attention. When you have communication, you can communicate with others. You can have a consideration. This is where you do research about your decision. And some people do internal research and some people do more external research. You might want to activate your friends, or you might want to see different aspects of alternatives that we have. Is everybody with me so far? Am I losing anyone? Feel free to just write. Okay, so is it making sense? Yeah. And then the next stage of this. Good. All right. I'm glad. So the next stage is the intention stage. And this is my favorite, particularly to work with students, because this is where you look at your priorities and you look at your needs. And this is the verticality stage. And verticality and movement analysis has so many important connotations. It's the plane of the self. It's a relationship to gravity. This is when I started to ask you to kind of push through. It's the relationship where with the self, where you kind of determine where we are. For example, in psychopathology, you will see depression, for example, clinical depression has a natural proclivity for sinking and for the lower end of the giving in to gravity, right? And then we have all these body metaphors that we use to be able to kind of make that a bit more succinct and make that, you know, we say, oh, we're down on the, you know, I'm down on my luck, we're down in the dumps, right? There's so many body metaphors. And if people have that, I'm starting a little cute list of body metaphors that we use, right? So, there's some affinities that happen with that. So in this stage, we're kind of looking at, you know, what is our intention and why is it important? And also, before I go, that is the tantrum stage. The intention stage is the tantrum stage. And I do a lot of work with tantruming and looking at, you know, kind of engaging with that release. Unfortunately, we don't have time to do that, but it needs a lot of holding. But it is the stage where we go, it's really necessary. And then the final stage is the action. And actually, I should add non-action. So this could be commitment. This could be activism. This could be setting some goals. Or this could be a stage where you decide not to do anything about it. And maybe you need to go back to any other stages. You need to revisit some of the stages, and you need to start connecting back into yourselves and looking at what are the aspects of flow that maybe need to, you know, we need a bit more, need a bit more time, right? And this is the thing, it's nicely placed. And also one of my favorite things, and this is where I get super nerdy about it, is that it has to do with development. It's also how we learn how to walk. And from birth, you know, flow has, you know, we reflect that with being in the womb, and that's where, you know, breath, and we're hearing everything. And then we start crawling, and the baby starts negotiating focus, right? And that's the space attention stage. This is why we put mobiles over cribs, you know, because that is something where we start engaging, the baby starts engaging with themselves and the others, right? And then the intention stage is when the baby's starting to start how to walk and, you know, grabbing onto anything and having to fall. And then how beautiful of a metaphor is that about how we kind of, even as little kids, we start really persisting on getting on our feet, and we don't let all those falls kind of get in the way and disappoint us. And there's a bit of that disappointment, but there's a perseverance to get back on your own 2 feet. And how important is that right now for us in the times we're living in? And then obviously time has to do when the baby starts to walk. And then, you know, that's usually the stage where all the parents are really, really exasperated because they have to start running around and following people around, which is really important. And that's when we start negotiating motivation, and we start negotiating drive, and we start going, oh, we don't really want something, so we retreat. So this is what's called for the dance therapist, the sagittal plane. So the plane, the wheel plane, and the plane of action. And this is the one that we are as adults usually very forced to be in all the time, particularly if you're a parent, you're a carer, you have your family, you have all these obligations. So we're always doing this. And what I really want to, you know, highlight when I do workshops with people is that we need to take our time a bit and have some dedicated space. And the workshop series I'm leading very soon, you know, I've been leading for about 6 years, called The Body Hotel, was about that, just to have that space, that dedicated time to explore without those pressures of having to do something. Yeah. Are we okay so far? So I've kind of thrown this massive model at you. But and then it has all these other dimensions. So I often use this to analyze, because I got a bit obsessive with it, and having conversations with people just from what they're saying, you know what stage they are, right? And I often, it translates back into the body questions, right? All of these are questions that we're constantly asking ourselves. How are we, right? What's our current bodily state? What's our environment? Where are we? What options do we have, right? What is our priority? And when or not should we commit to something? Or, you know, timing is quite important. And within that system is really incredible where we have the micro processes. So I talk about people being stuck in a stage. So if you're stuck in the attention stage, you're kind of... it's really hard because you're thinking and you don't know, blah, blah, blah. And if you don't realize what the priority is, then you might, you know, every single stage has its pro and con, right? So that's why it's really important not to to really ascertain where you are in your life and whether, if you're really stuck, do we have any other options? Can we go through one or the other, you know? And that's why the body questions come in. So what, you know, sometimes we have this process, and then also we all have our preferences, you know, that's why, for example, Warren Lamb was doing that. It was very successful with corporations and with businesses because he, you know, when you have a manager that is always on the attention stage, it's a problem, right? You want someone to investigate and to listen to their staff, but also be able to make decisions and look at priorities, right? Or for example, my favorite, the administrative assistants, those are the people that get stuff done. They just go and do it, you know, and those are the people that sometimes I approach first because I'm like, okay, you are the gatekeeper. You are the person that makes things happen, right? They're the key people. But also if we're not able to kind of access the other stages, then it can become quite problematic and we can become quite trapped. If we're only our needs and our priorities and we don't listen and investigate, or we only act, or we're only stuck in the flow stage where it's like the tango, I call it the tango, you know, where it's like, I'm just really frustrated. I don't know what to do. All of those things can become challenging, and they can paralyze us from actually actualizing and trying to see, you know, where there's a bit of negotiation and when there's a bit of, leeway and potential. And that's the important bit, that we look at our patterns and we figure out without judgment where we are and then going, okay, right, what do we actually need and what would be useful at this moment? That being said, I know I've thrown so much, and I know this is available for 48 hours. So I know that if this seems too much, maybe I'm saying it's decision making. You can always absorb it at this moment and come back to it at a later time. And I'm just going to offer a little bit to end. This is what I do a lot with our. Yes, I can definitely use an example. And this is what I do with my students. Usually we would have a really wonderful lush time, I'm using the word lush, to just investigate all these stages and for me to go through that with you. But in a very succinct way, this is what I do. So this is what I'm gonna ask you to do. And I'll just use an example to illustrate this, but I would love for you to actually write that down in your piece of paper. And I use it as a chart. So I sit down, even though, because sometimes moving and expressing it, we don't have a lot of time. That's a coach, yeah. As somebody's talking, or as I was thinking about something, let's say I wanted to, I don't know, let's see, what would be a really good transition? Okay, let's say I have a massive birthday, I'm gonna use a very silly example, but I was trying to decide a while ago what to do for a birthday, and I was very upset about it because I didn't know what to do with my birthday, and it was kind of a thing where you're always in that frustration of what to do. So I wrote down, for example, my sensations. I was just frustrated. I just didn't know whether I wanted to celebrate. I was feeling sad about calling attention to my birthday. It was the 40th, so it was kind of big, you know. So I wrote down all this stuff. Like I was feeling quite, my chest was tightened and I was kind of going through that. So I wrote those down on the flow stage. I wrote the anxiety around it, and then I looked. I went into the attention stage, and this didn't happen sequentially. I just started to kind of go through that, and I usually just move through it. But this one was kind of stuck in my head, and I'm like, no, just have to get it out on paper, and then I'll move it. and then I looked at. I looked at my options. So maybe I wanted to do something active and I didn't want to go to a pub, and I knew what I didn't want to do. So I was like, I want to do something outside. I want to do something interactive. I want to share with my loved ones, or I could just pick a couple of people and just do a little tiny bit, you know, nature. So I started kind of teasing out all the potential alternatives for that. And then the hardest part for me in that moment was figuring out my intention and what my priority was. And actually, when I kind of dug through it, my priority, and that's the hardest part, because we're always stuck in the tantrum stage, and I was like, what do I actually need? And I said, actually, I do need to spend the time with people I love. So I didn't want to do it alone, actually. So that became quite clear. And I also figure out that I really wanted to do something that wasn't in a bar or in a restaurant or in a kind of drinking. It's fine. But for this, I just wanted something that we were out in connection outside. So that became the priority. And so then that's what I put out to my friends. And they said, actually, there's a cave. There's the Cheddar Gorge cave. And we can go and kind of explain. And there's a market with some cheese and blah, blah. So we ended up doing this beautiful, amazing trip of just walking through caves, looking at history and all the things. And that's how I ended up making that decision. and I'm realizing now that it's 12:52. But, you know, what I'd love for you to do, yeah, we're not going to have time to do it now because I want to prioritize some questions. But this is your homework. We have embodiment conference homework on a Sunday. I'd love for you to actually revisit that. And it would be amazing, and this is where like the millennial style comes in, is that if you go through that, then I would love for you to pick a shape, a body shape, that goes through the four, right? Take a picture, it's fine. We take selfies all the time, you know. And then if you want to post them, just tag your photos. Yes, a movement shape. So maybe I will do if I have a Cheddar Gorge and I think about Cheddar Gorge, I think about this shape because it was kind of encompassing and really nurturing for me, right? Or it could be something around I'm turning 40, what am I going to do? You know, I could do a shape like this and show that kind of tension. So it would be really cool if people could take some pictures, go through that four movement shapes. Excellent, yeah. So four movement shapes, and you can take the pictures and you can tag them. Tag me in it. It's at Tania Caron. So the H is silent in Spanish, is Tania. And then, oh yeah, they put all the stuff. And also, if you have some feedback or you have more questions, Alina, thank you to, she put a little link to the Google Forms. And so you can actually give me feedback about this experience today or things that you'd like to see more in the future. So that's me. I know we didn't have a lot of time for questions. So, I mean, I answered questions throughout and people put some chat. So if there's any kind of burning question, Catherine, was there anything that you saw in the...
Yeah, so there are a few questions popping up in the Q&A. So Marshall is asking about specific movement sequences that address these different areas. And then Lena is asking about whether you could say something about the relationship of self, body, mind to the influence of external world, the in-between feeling and decision.
Yeah, wonderful. Yes. The most important thing I think about dental and psychotherapy is that I'm not teaching a movement sequence. It's actually that the client is identifying, the participant is identifying what are the movements in their body that actually embody that or that represent something. So that's why I use a lot of different imagery or, you know, usually the imagery comes from the client. Every single time I've thrown an image out, it rarely works. It has to come from them. They have to kind of tell me what they're going through and what actually is represented in all of the stages. Yes, Stefan, sometimes I'll move the four stages with a client. It depends on whether I'm working individually. In groups, usually I kind of hold the space. And it was quite interesting because even in when I did it in Norway, I lay out the stages usually and action ended up in the end of the hallway. And one of the students, it was a dance movement psychotherapy training, started out in the decision stage. So she actually chose a decision she had already made and then revisited all the stages that led up to that decision, right? And I was like, oh, you know, I've been saying it's linear and dynamic. And I was like, oh, that's brilliant. Actually, that's such a different way. And that can be approached in that sense as well. But yeah, like I'm saying, there's some activities, for example, I mean, there's some things that some of the skills of being a dance therapist kind of come into play here, how to feedback on movement, how to create those non-judgmental spaces, how to support where the people are at. And that's the most important aspect of decision-making is actually the prerogative is not to make a decision, but to understand where you are in between them and where the movement potential is.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Tanya.
Was there any?
It's wonderful. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I wish I could give you much more time for this. I know it's very limited, and I'm sorry for that, that I have to interrupt you. I wish I could, you know, give you one, at least one more hour or two, so we can hear more about and experience movements. But I'm sure you're doing some workshops around Europe, or, you know, perhaps some virtual classes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm proposing a massive research proposal at the moment with the Body Hotel, but this is something that I have been invited to do, and I've done it virtually as well, and it still works. It's very inspirational that movement transcends even in digital platforms. So
definitely
get in touch. Show me those pictures, because I really would love. That's one of my things. Is like, oh, I can't move with you. I can't do it with you.
But they can send you pictures or videos, right, and tag you on Instagram, Facebook. So definitely, as Tanya said, contact her. Do not hesitate to get in touch. She really loves it. She told it already to me a few weeks ago how much she loves to be in touch with other people. So please do it and get back to her. And also, I would like to ask you, Tanya, still, if you could share with the participants and us, your top tip embodiment about embodiment today. What do you want us to take home?
I guess it's asking your body what is rather than what should be or what was. It's the most important is to ask the body question, because that's how I frame desmoid psychotherapy. The body question is what is.